Kids are not told where a podcast comes from or where their shoes come from. Everything that we do, apart from eating, is art. But our kids are not veered in that direction because the arts is still perceived as fine art, for instance. But the arts are all the things that we consume all the time.
My guests, Abby and Rupert from Rude. It's one of those times where you sit down with people that you've known for so long and actually you don't know enough about them. And so these podcasts are a joy because I love their work. I love everything that they represent, but it was as if they just kept blossoming through the interview. And this episode is all about sort of getting under the skin of creativity as a whole and business and the ups and downs, the nuts and bolts, the heart-wrenching moments where you have to close a company to the moments that you realize you might be starting a movement 25 years in. It's also that point where I've interviewed a lot of people and they get to a stage where they say, right, this is it. And for Abby, she turned a desk over. For me, I kicked off the heels. It's a dedication to a mission of your life. And almost it feels as if your life depends on it. This is a podcast you must listen to if you believe in creativity. If you right now are saying, hell yes, I know everything in life is better with creativity in it, you must listen because this is about safeguarding our future generations. So grab a cup of tea, settle down. If Rupert had his way, get some felt tips out and listen to people doing what they love. Enjoy.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. So let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration. Abby and Rupert, you're on Conversations of Inspiration, and I'm so happy to welcome you.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you very much.
Very pleased to be here.
I can see behind you the shop, and I remember being there and having the most gorgeous time. I was on the independent roadshow I did, I think, with the bus, 2021. And I came in, you made me a lovely coffee. I bought quite a lot of things. And it's just the most gorgeous, gorgeous space. Let me just introduce you, because we've been part of each other's worlds for quite a few years now. And so this time is actually wonderful to spend with you properly, not us running around or trying to do some artwork for Colour Friday. 25 years you've been running your design and print studio. You've collaborated with some of the biggest and best businesses. And I'm excited also to talk about your new book, Create. Tell me, we were just laughing about the summer. And how I was just saying, and you have the same, people go, how was your summer? And I'm like, you know that they want me to say, oh, it was so lovely. I was just relaxing and, you know, just putting on some suntan lotion continuously. But actually, the reality, isn't it? It's quite different summers for us folk.
100%.
Yeah, if you're running your own creative business or any business, yes, summer is a challenge, especially if you've got, our kids are a bit older now, but if you've got younger kids as well, it is a juggle. And then we've got a shop as well, which August turns out to be our busiest month.
Is it? People are more at home coming in for that. They're the people that we're talking about.
Yes, exactly. They always used to go away on holiday, but we seem to have like drawn in a different crowd now that come to seek us out. So we've become a little bit more destinational, which is the dream, isn't it? So whereas a lot of people go, because we're in quite a suburban area, a lot of people go away for holidays. And I was just saying to you, Holly, they all get a cab from outside our shop. So they're all waving at us going, bye, we're going to Tenerife. And we're like that, okay, anyone for a flat white? But it is turning out to be quite busy in the shop now in August. So, you know, maybe that's a good thing.
We were talking about sprinkling the summer over the year. Rather than feeling like we've missed out, we can just have our little sort of micro summer bits, potentially.
Exactly. I think the benefits of working for yourself spread out across the year. You know, like we sat in a sauna last Monday morning, just going, isn't it great working for yourself? It still have its benefits.
It does. It really does.
Yeah.
And I know your boys are older, Billy and Herbie. And so I'm also wondering, when you do get away, it's quite different, isn't it? Mine's going to turn 21 next birthday. But it is a different type of holiday, isn't it? I mean, when you were talking about you went to France and I think your caption said, you've never laughed your head off so much, nor drunk like a fish as much.
Oh my God.
It tends to happen, doesn't it?
Well, especially when you have two naughty boys that are like 17 and 21 and they're just like sneaking off for vapes and various things. And we're trying to hide it from our mums that we also took on holiday with us. And then they're like, oh, should we go get some tinnies for the beach, mum? And I'm like, oh, yeah, why not? So we're just like swimming a bit pissed together, the three or four of us. And it was just, and really, really like laughing like drains the entire holiday. It was so wonderful. They're so funny.
It is so funny. Or Harry's like, basically the idea is that we go out every single night of the holiday. And I'm like, do you understand? This is meant to be a holiday. I can manage one night a week. Do you want to, not 14 days or 10 days in a row. Are you just absolutely murdered? But then you're like, oh, but these are the only time. This is the only time he's going to be with us. So let's go out again.
So you have to do it, don't you? We introduced my mum and my youngest in Negronis.
Ah, how did that...
Car crash.
Yeah. Yeah. Not advisable.
Not advisable.
So tell me, when you're away though, and something else I've almost tried to sort of rewire for our small businesses. So we sprinkle our summer holidays across the year, having a sauna on a Monday morning when others might be on the tube.
Yeah.
What about the switching off part, which I also find quite difficult to sort of answer, because I don't switch off necessarily.
I don't think we've ever really switched off, if I'm honest.
Right.
Which is quite strange, isn't it? I think we're learning to switch off by doing yoga and, you know, doing lots of stuff. But I think we're always, always working. And I think we always have been.
And do you think it's... Because I'm thinking that, is it working? Or is it... I seem to now say, well, I understand that I can't do this switching off thing, but I can do different types of thinking. I could challenge myself to do less of the weeds and the day-to-day and more of the fun stuff, the real visualization. Yeah. I don't know what you feel about that.
Yeah, I think we made the decision a couple of years ago to do all the finance and all the admin on a Monday morning and then park it for the rest of the week, because creativity and finance sometimes aren't a great mix.
Yeah.
And I in particular became very stunted with my creativity because I was dealing with money. So my way was to park it on a Monday and not touch it again for a week. It's not always possible, but it's a nice idea.
I'm not being funny though. You've really messed up a Monday. I mean, if you're going to have the blues about a Monday, you've made the Monday seriously bad, haven't you?
Yeah, you made the Monday really bad and then you go to the sauna.
It makes a Friday oh so much sweeter. We're talking of bigger views, and you might know on this podcast, I love to take my guests back to their younger selves and almost understand how you were shaped and moulded. And I know your story together began when you both met at a graphic design company in London. Abby, tell me about the journey that led you to that point, because you'd attended Preston University studying graphic design. So I'm thinking that you always have been creative. Was this ever since you were a little one?
Yeah, I think so. I sort of tell this story that my auntie was an actress in the West End and we used to come to London all the time. And I remember seeing this amazing ENO poster on the tube. And I said to my mum, what is that? And she's like, I think it's called it's an industry called graphic design. And I was like, oh, right, okay. And I was lucky enough to have an amazing technical college down the road from me. So sort of at age 12, I always knew that I was going to go to this technical college. I was going to do graphic design. And that was my path. Like, it was just that. So I remember going into school and saying to my art teacher, who was amazing, Mrs. Steiner, big up to her. And she had this incredible art room. And we had a kiln in there. So we were doing ceramics all the time. We would do screen printing. We would just go sit and draw like spider plants with her. And I taught myself to drink black coffee because she did, and she was very cool. And we listened to the Eurythmics together. Anyway, it was just this safe place. And I know Bob and Roberta Smith, lovely Patrick, talks about that as well. And it was just really important to be nurtured in that environment. And I've only realised now, when my kids don't have that in their schools, how important it is to be in a place surrounded by art and having open conversations. So I think I was always encouraged to do it. My parents always encouraged me that arts was never a problem. It was always seen as a great, amazing thing to do. And I think that's why also we're, you know, turning over such a lot from the UK when we're exporting creative art. We're like 126 billion a year. And that's because we were brought up in these amazing art spaces and we were allowed to have nurtured time. So it was never even a question for me that the arts was going to be my profession. And then I went to technical college, adored it, found my people. And then I went to Preston University. And then I came out and I'd actually done 6 years of graphic design. And I was like, oh God, I hate graphic design. So my idea then, I worked for a couple of years. I was lucky enough to do a work placement that turned into a job, came straight down to London, got into a job, and then decided that I was going to do my own foundation course. So every night for, a couple of years, I went and did my own foundation because I actually did an OND in graphics at the technical college. So I felt that I'd missed out on that broad spectrum of arts. Mm. So I did that. And then I was like, I want to set up a company that does all these things. And so then I met Rupert and I was like, oh my God, who's that guy eating cake all the time? He looks amazing. So got to know Rue and I was like, I want to do all these things as a company. And yeah. Rue was like, well, I've just started a fashion label called Rude and I'm going to get into all these shops. And he just had the audacity to walk into shops and say, you need to stop my label.
I mean, isn't that, I'm going to, you go on to Rupert's part there. I'm wondering, Rupert, if we go to you as a little Roo, Abby has been known to say that you probably came out of the womb with a set of felt tips.
Yeah.
So does that mean that creativity was a big part of your childhood?
Well, yeah, my dad was, he's an architect, but he was an artist as well. And my mum's very creative, and they had creative friends. And I remember from a very young age, I'm very dyslexic. So I was so bad at school. I sort of remember going to school and not really hearing why I was meant to be there. Nothing was explained to me. And art was all I ever wanted to do. And my parents just pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And I'm a twin and I was put down the year below my twins. So I was always just the bottom of the class, you know. And so yeah. I found school very difficult, but I just loved being in the art room and I had great art teachers. And then my mum and dad said go and do a foundation at Central St Martin's. And, you know, they just really pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. Yeah, my world has always been creating. Like, I've never done anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fantastic, isn't it? So when you say, what's my idea? And it's, you know, printing illustrations onto T-shirts, you make these things and you walk them into Selfridges and you say, you need to buy these. And it sort of worked. It was sort of 1996, 1997. And it was a time when streetwear was really taking off. And it was a really amazing time in London, sort of that sort of 90s culture.
It's such a beautiful story because I think now to where you are now, but we're going to get through your whole story. But I just love the fact that it just all started and you've been on it together for the whole time. It's just am I right in saying that you were both slightly disillusioned by the corporate world of graphics?
Well, at this company where we met, I only got introduced to them because my mum was catering for their like 15th birthday and I was serving drinks. And the boss said, do you want to come and work here? And so I did. And I was there for 9 months. It was doing corporate logos for BT and things like that. And it just really was not my thing. I knew that I couldn't ever, ever work for anyone else again. And
you just had that one taste.
Yeah, well, one taste. And I was like, that is it.
That is enough for me. Yeah. Thank you. I'm out.
And we're still very good friends with the people that set up that company. But they knew that wasn't my path. And so, yeah, we started working together.
Is this where you started the label? So you started a T-shirt label, Rude, which I discovered only when researching you, is the abbreviation for Rude Design.
Yes. So I was sort of Rude Design, and then it just got shortened to Rude. And we were obsessed with drawing, screen printing onto T-shirts, and eventually it became products and all sorts of stuff. But we had a little studio down on Great Portland Street, and then we moved it over to East London.
Well, this is when you'd both got together, because Abby, at the same time, you started a design company called Pool.
Yeah.
And so just tell me about just there, because I'm just getting back into the story, which is disillusioned, both setting up your own thing.
Uh-huh.
And tell me about when that cross-pollination happened and what was the opportunity or the inspiration when you thought, I'm going to move these two medias sort of together and that you were going to do it together?
Sure. So I think it was when I met Rue and I just started my own design agency, as you said. And we were just chatting about like our ideal setup. And then we realised that I'd already got a client base because I was running my own business. So that's kind of how we funded the label. So in the beginning, we were doing lots of like client stuff and then putting all the money into the T-shirt business and building that. And then we also managed to get a fantastic team of people around us. Like Rue had particularly very cool friends in like fashion and styling and photography. Mm. And so he had this amazing friend called Jackie Beek, and she was a stylist. So she was like, you need to do amazing photographs, guys. So we did fantastic photographs. And then people like ID, Dazed, Vogue even would say to us, you can have spreads for free because we love your artwork so much. It was back in the days when you'd run and get a positive printed and then you'd like run it to the printer and then they put it in the magazine. So overnight, literally, people were ringing us up. We had one telephone between us. They were ringing us up going, oh, can I speak to distribution? And I'd be like, one second, pass the phone over to Rupert. He'd be in distribution. And it would go like this all day. And then we got a lovely guy called Robert, who worked for Machino, and he took us on as an agent. So he would literally show people their collections and then bring them around to us. So because we were so naive and we were from print backgrounds rather than fashion backgrounds, we didn't know who any of these people were. So he'd bring shops like Colette, who was an enormous, amazing shop in Paris. And we would literally think that they were, I don't know, the bin man. We didn't know who these people were. And so there was a lovely thing where we just sort of bumbled through and became this big brand sort of overnight on zero money. So it was really exciting. And lots of people were wearing our clothes, like the Spice Girls, the Sugar Babes, you know, all those people.
They must have thought, because you were entering the fashion world, which you didn't know anything about, that you were so fashionista that you just didn't even care who they were.
Honestly.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you were so acting fashion.
I think so.
Without even knowing it.
I remember one time the buyer for Urban Outfitters came in and I was so hungover, I fell asleep in the toilet. And I came out and Rupert was like, you fell asleep for the whole of the buy. That was like really important. And I was like,
yeah, I think we had lots of energy and it was an amazing time. But I think we struggled with that business acumen, you know, that you need to have to really take something off.
Yeah, I was going to ask because this was, am I right in saying 1998?
Talking to someone that's really done it, we really struggled with that part. It was 1998, and we were joined by a finance guy who was meant to take it sort of bigger. And he was just the wrong person to do it.
Yeah.
It's at that point when it can go big. And if you don't have the right people around you, it's just not going to work.
Because you were really experiencing proper growth because you had murals, prints, fashion, animation, editorial design. You worked with some of the biggest brands, including Apple, UK Vogue, Absolute, Tate Modern. I mean, the list goes on. This is a pinch me moment, isn't it, when you have projects like that. Can you remember, if before we go into potentially the sort of where it didn't go so right, tell me about some of the projects that did go right. Are there some that just stay in your mind as, did we actually do that?
Well, it's funny, all these projects that you're talking about happened after it didn't go right.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, so the brand was building, as in we were selling to loads of shops, having to make lots of stuff. We made everything out of Portugal, but it was just getting too big to manage and to cope with that sort of cash flow.
Yeah.
And that's when it suddenly had to come to a halt. And then we pushed all our creativity into finding these projects with these great brands. And that was just us doing that.
So when you say, so let's go to where, so it was the fashion side of things. And I can imagine what you're getting caught up into, which is just accelerated, isn't it, to today.
Yeah.
Imagine being a fashion company today and what you have to even begin to compete with.
Impossible.
It looks positively slow when you look back at where you must have been.
100%.
Abby, so you knew you needed a finance person because you knew that that was the bit that was going to either make and break this.
Yeah.
But it just didn't work out.
No, we really tried. Like, we tried to get Angels on board. We wanted to be Diesel. You know, we wanted to be massive. And I think if it had happened now, we would have crowdfunded it, or there would be many other ways of doing it. And I think business is so much easier to set up these days. Mm. But we didn't get the money, but we had really big order books for the time, you know, say like £1 million. But to produce that £1 million order book meant putting up 500 grand or 300 grand, which we just didn't have. We were 26 and 28. And, you know, it was just like really, really hand to mouth. So in the end, we managed to persuade all the factories to make the orders. All the orders went out 2 months late because we were put to the back of the order books of the, the factory. And then they all returned the orders. So we ended up having all these orders returned. And so we actually had to liquidate. And it was devastating. It was just really, really hard. It was just really hard.
Yeah, it was like 2002, I think. And we'd opened our first shop in Brick Lane called Let's Make T-Shirts, where people could come in and buy a T-shirt in a pizza box.
I mean, how clever is that?
Yeah, it was.
We printed them to order.
It was an amazing shop, but it just didn't financially work.
Yeah.
And we also had Billy at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Billy was then born. Actually, we closed the shop in 2003 and Billy was born in the January of 2004. And that's why now when we said if we're ever going to do a shop again, we're going to get it right.
Yeah.
But it was before the days of Shopify. It was before the days of, you know, it's so, if you, you know, we've got all the tools to make businesses work now.
Yeah.
But back then, there just wasn't any of that.
There wasn't.
You even had to pay a deposit of £400 to get a PDQ machine. I don't know if you remember, Holly, they would like bike them over and you'd have to sign it and then they'd take this deposit of money just to be able to take card payments in a shop. It was extraordinary.
Unbelievable.
But it was just how it was.
But I mean, do you think, because you touch on all of this, don't you, in your book, Time Flies When You're Being Rude.
Yeah.
And you're telling the stories of not only your projects that you worked on, but some of the tougher times that you're describing now.
Yeah.
When you are growing and expanding and you talk about overexpansion.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes, and it's an important moment before we get on to other parts of your story, because so often we think that growth of a business is linear and we sort of gloss over these sort of struggles and these things because, you know, if I was to transport us right now back to the moment that you were folding the company, the pain, the logistics, the trying to deal with a young kid, the whole thing, having the wrong finance person, understanding you've got the wrong finance person.
Yeah.
How do you even know you've got the wrong finance person? They know more than I do, surely. We should listen. What do we know? All these sorts of things that I can imagine people listening are nodding, you know, thinking, Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You wanted to be the new Diesel, so you had the vision. Potentially you're saying, but the era wasn't right. Did you know what I mean? That the ability to scale, it's made easier now due to technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But in saying that, the era allowed us to be massive immediately. Yes. Because there wasn't really the competition like there is now. It was like Duffer and Stussy making skate T-shirts. Yeah. And then we came along and I'd been like, traveling around America for a while and just did like loads of sketches of American people like smoking fags and drinking sodas and going to fish fries. And Rupert was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Let's put all these images onto T-shirts. So it was these very sort of, again, naive, hand-drawn images that were going onto T-shirts that just looked super fresh. And then all of my friends were in the fashion industry and they were like, oh yeah, we pin loads of Rood up to our pin boards because you're like really cool at the moment and all of this. But it was, yeah, it was that thing of just being in the right time at the right place, but being able to scale was virtually impossible without like, you know, friends and family finance, which we didn't have access to. Mm. So yeah, we got really close and then it just did slightly fall apart. And it was devastating because we lost our trademark for a little bit. Someone else bought it and we had to buy it back off them. The shop that we like lovingly put together and spent thousands on, I had to take apart by hand and put to its original state, which was like dog dirt. And I just remember feeling so depressed for like definitely a year, you know, just felt like such a massive failure. And I remember a friend saying to me, you know, if you were in the States, this would be seen as a success.
Yes.
You know, because the more successes and like failures you notch up, the better. But over here, I just felt like we were being really damned. And, you know, even I felt like my family didn't really understand. They were like, oh, well, you're not very good with money. So that's why it hasn't worked. And I was just felt like, well, I have these all these aspirations. And sometimes you just feel really held back. And it just felt like that. It felt like a really hard, wounded time for sure.
Oh my goodness.
But what's interesting is that we've continued to do the same. Like we've done another shop.
Yeah.
We've, you know, you just continue to take risks. That's the sort of people that we are. And you have to just keep on going.
Well, keep on going and morph and change. And I remember it's not the same at all, but when we had the shop and at Holly & Co, we had to close for the last day. Just because it just wouldn't work. And however much money I pumped in, I just could not make it work and just was paying, almost paying for people to have coffees.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, it was like someone had someone should have just turned up with a violin. It was like the saddest moment ever. Taking in the chairs for the last time. Do you know what I mean? Like, as you said, stripping the cupboards, turning out the lights. It's like the end of Cheers or end of Friends. Yeah. It was like literally wanted to, I just didn't, you know, and there you were. And I've had my own fair share of other bits in business or, you know, looking at things saying, this is such a slightly public failing.
Very public.
Yeah. Very public.
Yeah, shutting a
failing.
Shop is pretty awful.
Yeah. Because it's this physical manifestation of basically your dreams. So you might as well just take your dreams down to, as you said, some shitty place that you'd taken on. And it can feel embarrassing as well.
It was embarrassing.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. And I think we don't talk about this enough because you said that correctly. In America, it's like notches on your bedpost.
Of course.
It's seen as, well, then at least you tried, right?
Yeah.
And you've got more experience now to do the next thing.
Yeah.
Whereas here, we're like one try, shame.
Yeah.
And back under the rock.
Exactly. But also it carries through. So like quite recently, just before Christmas this year, just gone, I had this thing where I couldn't physically come into my own shop that we own because the shop is attached to the house. And if I look from the house through to the shop and I don't see anyone in there, I have this crushing failure still. And it makes me so mad. And we've been having like an amazing industry coach helping us recently. And she was like, oh my God, you're still beating yourself up with that shitty stick. And I'm like, I can't help it. You know, it takes so much rewiring to get over it.
Yeah, it does. And I don't think we're brought, I just don't think we have been wired that way in the UK. I just don't think that we have.
I think we like to see people publicly fail, and that's so sad.
When I first first launched Holly & Co, it was my dream to put some fun back into the grey world of retail, but also to do it with a purpose, as a collective. I'm proud to unite the most talented UK makers and artists because we believe that together we can create a more thoughtful way to shop, live and work. So here's a little reminder of our promise to you. Firstly, we'll help you shop by your values. By curating thoughtfully made finds from innovative founders, we'll help you vote with your money for the kind of world you want to live in. Secondly, we'll inspire you in meaningful, thought-provoking ways, bringing fresh, creative ideas as well as unique gifts and homeware to every area of your life. And finally, we'll keep championing this community. You'll find that 95% of our small businesses are female-founded and 97% of our team are female. So we're run by women, made by women, but open to all. That's why we're passionate about inclusivity as well as about shining a light on creative independence across the UK. Sign up to our emails at holly.co to find out more. But for now, let's get back to our conversation of inspiration. Let's get to happier times. Thank you, by the way, for sharing and being vulnerable and writing about it and talking about it, because I think it's only until we do these things. I was writing an article the other day about how I wish I could just sort of go there with some of the stuff that, you know, yeah. I feel ashamed and a failure at. And I'm still not there at a place where I can, because no. I think certainly yeah. as a female entrepreneur, I mean, you've got all of that to contend with, because
of course,
you know, yeah. you've got not only, you know, the one shot of it that we're allowed to start a business, but you know, that's it. One time, that's it, your chance.
Yeah.
Do not mess it up.
Yeah.
And so I think, but until the day that I do feel able to talk about it, like you yourself, how are we going to help others?
Absolutely.
How are we going to stop this shame carrying on?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So back to the happier times. You have a signature style. I have so much of your work. It's unapologetically using colour, which obviously slightly I adore. And it's this energy and I suppose optimism. So the smile and the scale of the murals and this larger than life. Why that? Why that sense? You've sort of encapsulated joy and positivity, but how was that then where you said, right, that is our mark on the world, that this is going to be our way?
I think this is yours, Ru.
I think we were obsessed with illustration and we did a lot of typography. And on the T-shirts, we were doing one colour prints. And when we relaunched our portfolio of work, which we did with an agent, we had an agent, a really good friend of ours called Tanya. And we used to get sort of lots of work in advertising and publishing and do murals. We sort of made the work become very bold, all about typography, all about colour, that was quite influenced by pop art, retro styles, you know, David Hockney. And it just formed into this sort of this colourful style that is our signature, which is a mix of both our works, but it depends what we're doing. It's sort of, it's both our hands, but it's about printmaking, it's about layers, it's about colour, it's about creativity, really. And it's always just stayed sort of the same. The work hasn't changed that much mm-hmm. as we've gone on.
But it has, it does evolve though. So for instance, over COVID, Rude literally, well, A, when we closed Rude, we were like, we need to make some money in a proper way, you know, yeah. not having to fund our own things. So we decided that Rude would sit down and do an illustration portfolio, which was amazing. And then he's just always evolved that. So over COVID, he sat down and did some really great positive, like, artwork, purveyors of positivity, we like to call ourselves, and just did like tranches of new work. And it sort of happens where we just get with him in particular, Rue is really, I'd say, the main illustrator and mark maker. And he just like comes out with these brilliant things, but he has to be in the right headspace to do it. And me talking about the Christmas breakdown that I had, Rue was also having one about a year ago. And we would just realised...
Hopefully not at the same time. No.
Well, no, not really.
No, we have breakdowns at different times.
Oh, good. Well done. You diarise them.
Yeah, when Abby couldn't come in the shop, I was quite capable to be in there.
But it is like tag team. But I think at that time I said to Rue, you need to go on a creative retreat. And so I sent Rupert and our best pal Harry off to see our friend Natalie, who runs an amazing art retreat called The Mill in the south of France. And Rue went and got his creative chops back and came back and went, right, you need to go. So I think there's always, you know, our work does evolve all the time, especially, you know, doing a mural is different to doing an animation or an advert.
Yes.
So you have to do things big scale and think about blocks of colour and how you're going to apply it and how you're going to transform an old wall into this beautiful thing. So your portfolio just does evolve because of the types of work that you're doing.
I was going to say, because I was looking at social media, and I mean, it's not for anyone afraid of heights, is it, your murals? Because
No. You
were literally on the top of towers and scaffolding, looking down at the world below. And it must be quite a moment where you know that your work is creating such an enduring mark on the landscape. And there's lots of messaging in your work in general, but especially in your murals, you're literally helping define almost the identity and soul, of a place. Do you feel a weight of responsibility to get it just right? Because it's going to almost, isn't it, rub off, I suppose, on the community and the energy the community has for years. How do you land on it?
Well, those big murals, to be fair, don't happen that often. I think the one that we worked on recently up in Wood Green in North London had been commissioned sort of 10 years before. And we went and did a repaint of it, which is amazing because it just means that they love it and they want to keep it there.
Yeah.
For any paint sort of lovers, like masonry paint only lasts sort of 7 to 8 years. So after 10 years, you do have to...
Yes.
Refurb it.
Yeah, but it was a mix of, there's sort of two messages. One is happy together and one...
From the ground up.
Yeah, from the ground up, because it's a co-working space and it's about small businesses growing, which is quite nice for us to be writing that message. But yeah, it's amazing doing those sort of murals.
In fact, we'd love to do more of those. They're so nice. It's so nice to be up really high and just listening to podcasts and painting. I mean, painting is so mindful, as we all know.
Yeah.
And just to spend a few weeks doing that. I even got my mum up because she has Alzheimer's. And the one thing that she loves to do is to paint. So she was like painting with her. So she was just loving it. Like, she got my dungarees on. She was like getting paint in her hair. And then at the end of the day, she's like, come on, let's go for a pint. And I was like, oh God, this is like my mum. It's so nice.
Oh, I'm so
happy. And also painting next to each other with anyone. It's like driving in a car. You can have fantastic conversations without looking at each other.
Yes.
So often they're really good places for getting some stuff out. So we have loads of conversations, Rue and I do, when we're, you know, quite difficult conversations when we're painting, because you just have the freedom to think about these things.
I wanted to now come on to kids, because I spoke recently, we mentioned already Patrick from Bob and Roberta Smith, and I was in, he was on this podcast, and we were in conversation about such important subjects. And it has really stuck with me, because this is a subject, as I mentioned to you, very dear to my heart, that creativity isn't a nice to have, it's a need to have, especially for our children and our young people. And I know it's a subject that you are incredibly passionate about, and it's one that has led you to create the new book, Create, Unleash Your Creative Superpowers. And it's completely centered around kids. I know it's been basically in your mind coming to fruition for what, 15 years? So it's a true labor of love. Can you tell me more about this book?
Sure. So when my kids went to school, school, probably like 2012, 13, something like that, I realised that there was no art. I was devastated. I was like, oh, guys, when do you do the art? Like, is it like once a day? They were like, oh, we do it once a month and it's for 1 hour. And we basically make them build a castle out of bog rolls. And I'm like, oh, my God. So it was literally, imagine, like, it was like Joan of Arc with a flat white stormed into the head teacher's office. I was like, what the? And she was like, well, you could do the art club if you want. And I was like, yes, I will do the art club. Thank you.
So you left going, no, that wasn't the plan because I have no time whatsoever. And how
exactly.
Have I committed to an art club?
Yes. I was like, yes, I will do the after school art club. So I started doing it. They were like, oh, we don't have any materials, but we can pay you £30 or something. So I was like, okay, this is fine. So when I started doing it, there was like three kids and they just wanted to paint all over their face. And I was like, this is not it. So I decided to make it about different creative industry art disciplines. So 1 week I would go in and I'd talk about architecture. The next week I would go in and I'd explain what printmaking is or theatre or performance arts. And then I would write them a brief based around that subject. So I'd be like, I'd explain what something was and then I'd be like, right, now we're going to do a quick brief. So, for instance, I would say we're going to do a catwalk show. You've got 40 minutes to prepare it. We'd like move all the tables in the classroom into a big runway. And then there was this one boy called Holden who was amazing. And it was the first time I saw him really jump into action. And he dressed everyone and everyone walked the catwalk and everyone was screaming and it was amazing. And each week a light bulb would go on for one of the kids. And I just thought, this is what we need to do, is to not stop teaching arts as in messy play. Of course, that's incredibly important. But we can also teach creativity just by thinking. These are very simple things that we can do that require no iPads, no technology, no resources. They're literally, we need to teach kids to come up with their own ideas. So that's really where the book was born. And I know, Rob, and you were talking about the EBAC system and the non-compulsory arts that was brought in 2010. And it has just obviously massively declined. And we see a huge pipeline blockage in schools. It's something like 60 or 70%. I keep adding on a 10% every time I say it. So that might not be the real fact. But
no, I think it is.
But it's huge, the decline in uptake of the art subjects. And obviously, we see the mental health impacts and all of these things. And so I was like, right, I'm going to get this into a book. So we nearly got it published with a different publisher, and then we got ghosted, and then I just stuck it on the Dropbox. And then Rishi Sunak said, all kids should do maths till you're 18. And I was like, oh my God. And literally just tipped the table up in front of me. And I was like, right, this is the moment. I need to get that back off the Dropbox and put some proper time into this.
To those of you who might not have listened to the podcast with Patrick from Rob and Roberta, I ask you to, because this is beautifully dovetails with this podcast, which is we were talking about STEM in our education system, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And he said we should be teaching STEAM.
100%.
Just add the A, everyone. Just add the A, because I think that for whatever reason, creativity is now seen as this sort of standalone thing that's not part of our everyday lives, or critical thinking, or social skills, or building, I don't know, confidence, and things that Rob Bidulph and Patrick actively encourage in our children. And we're seeing this mental health crisis where the research supports all of what you're saying, because creativity is now no longer there. It's been downgraded. And what this impact is going to have on our younger generations or their careers or their confidence, it's a ripple effect, isn't it? We're sort of, It's only in this podcast, actually, I'm thinking about that my entire schooling was the best bits of it for me were the creative design and technology, art. I had a teacher that allowed me to build one sculpture for the whole of my A-level. It was called Tom, Dick and Harry, and it was these three men combined in clay, allowed me to work on it for 2 years. And I think about my creative design to technology building the first claim to fame recycling bin and winning Young Engineer of the Year with this. But I think about these teachers that I had, and I think about how I would go in at weekends and they would open up the school for me so that I could just be in the classroom and everything. Yeah. That it was the whole making of me. And now when you say the facts that your kid was going to do art once a month.
Yeah.
This is abusive.
It's appalling. It is abusive. And I just think that the arts... Sorry, Ru, go on.
I was just thinking more than anything, it's this, it's, you know, the people in charge, the politicians, want a world without creativity. And when you think of that world without creativity, it's just you forget that all the amazing things that we have to do with the arts, you know, that are happening in front of us, from Netflix to going to a gallery, going to your local coffee shop or whatever it is, has been born from someone that, like us, knew that was their path to creating amazing creative businesses. And if you strip that out, I'm sure people will eventually find their way, but we should be encouraging it from an early age, because not everyone is good at maths and not everyone is good at STEM subjects.
I think also, like, kids are not told where a podcast comes from or where their shoes come from or where, you know, everything that we do apart from eating is art, it's play, it's art. Mm-hmm. But we're not... Our kids are not veered in that direction, because the arts is still perceived as fine art, for instance. But the arts are all the things that we consume all the time. And even Mo Godat the other day was saying, you know, with the onslaught of AI, etc., the things that are going to be the best things to be in the industry is the creative industries, because everyone's going to have more downtime if it goes, you know, according to the way that it looks like it's going to go. Everything will be more automated. We'll have more time to do pleasurable things, but also things that really make you stop and think. And I thought that recently with that program Adolescent that Stephen Graham did. And just the fact that that is a fantastic example of a piece of art that makes everyone think. Yet people don't call it a piece of art, they call it a film. Mm. You know, and I was in a Wetherspoons garden in Brighton and I heard three different tables talking about this program. And I was like, oh, wow. I was like, this, we need to show everyone that these are the arts. All these things that we consume all the time are the things that we can do as jobs. And AI, frankly, is... You know, there's no, I don't see why we should be learning rote about Tudors, because like we have it all on AI. We need to be thinking of new things that can save our planet, can save our world. And creative thinkers mixed with AI is the future. It isn't learning maths by rote. It's just not.
I just couldn't agree with you more. It's why your book is really, really important. I mean, it's more than a book. It's a movement. And that is what you are sparking here. Because the next stage is to get that book into every primary school in the UK. And I'm right there. I'm definitely doing it for my niece's school. Tell me about this bit, because we've got a lot of listeners listening right now. Tell me about how you want us to get involved.
Okay, so the book has 50 different mentors from across the creative industries, and they all have a double page spread each, and they each talk about how they got into the industry, their routine and their skills and blah, blah, blah. So now I want to take all of that online and create an online resource so that anyone, no, regardless of background, can access this, and it becomes a great big creative careers tool. So the idea with the book is that it goes into year six classrooms, so age 11, so just before kids are going up to secondary school. And it gives them the language to talk to their carers and parents about these fantastic jobs that they might want to do when they go to secondary. Because when they go to secondary, I could tell you now that they will not be told about these jobs. Maybe graphic design, maybe a couple of the top hitters, but they will not know about making wigs or being a sound technician or being a carpenter on a film set. So this is about giving all those kids the opportunity to see these fantastic jobs and to be able to go online and watch our podcasts and have, you know, my friend Harry is like head of costume at the Hammersmith Lyric, and he also designs for Drag Race. To hear him talk on a podcast about his route in and how it's accessible for everyone is what I want every kid to see. And the idea about getting these books into primary school is to make sure that everyone can see a virtual, like an actual copy of it, but then go, oh, okay, this is the movement. I am creative. I want to tell my teachers about this. I want them to buy the books in. I want to follow their podcasts. And it's just about, it is absolutely a movement, but it's really linking mentors, so industry mentors, with schools and trying to make that link between education and industry. And my bigger idea, as I was saying to you before, is to eventually be able to do apprenticeships, to have big make days, to have like all of creative industries open up their factories, their workshops throughout the UK. I mean, throughout the world, clearly that would be my goal, but throughout the UK, you know, so you have a carpentry shop in Sheffield and they go, okay, I'm going to open up my shop for a day or for a week. Bring the kids, let me show them what they do. And so the kids can have actual tangible conversations with people and then see that it's a route that they can go into. Because at the moment, I mean, for instance, I went and did an assembly at my niece's school, and it's an all-girls grammar school, and there was about 300 girls in the audience, and afterwards, they honestly, like half of them put their hands up, and most of the questions were, can you do this as a real job, or is it a side hustle? My mum and dad say not to go into this. And I was really shocked. And I answered these questions and I was like, they are real jobs and this is how you get into them. And then when I asked their teachers at the end, I said, where do you send these girls? Like online. And they said, the UCAS website. And I was like, huh? I was like, there is nowhere that is doing something like this that shows the work that we do in the industries. And so that's why it's so important to get this out and to get our whole, you know, nation like talking about creativity is a good thing. Yeah,
absolutely. This is the future. So for everyone here on the podcast, you've heard it here. We all know a kid, might be the neighbor's kid, whatever. It might be your own, might be your niece. I'm going to do my niece's school, where you're going to go on to Rood's website. You're going to buy the school pack. It's two books, two posters and some stickers. I think it's £60. And you're going to buy it. And then you're going to go to the school and you're going to give this in to the school. And maybe you even, what I'm thinking is I'm going to offer my services. So I'm going to offer to go in and maybe read from the book.
Amazing.
To the kids once a week about some careers and talk about it all. And so this is something so important, everyone. If we all bitch and moan about the rise of AI in that sort of scary way, and we're not actually looking at the fact that actually creative thinkers plus AI might basically save the planet, or, you know, there might be some amazing things that come out of it. We can do this here. You're 25 years, Roo, into running the business. So you've thriving design studio, wonderful gallery, coffee shop, everyday sunshine in Stoke Newington.
Yeah.
You're married, you work together. I saw sometimes, I'm going to just say this, but probably there's a reality. I saw that sometimes your boys work in the coffee shop.
They do.
Yeah. Billy lives in South London now, but Herbie works every Saturday, Sunday.
Although we had a hilarious moment when Rue, Herbie and I were working last weekend, and Herbie came in at the most busiest moment, and there was like people backed up out the door waiting for coffees and just basically blamed me for running a really bad shop. So I threw spoon in the sink and I was like, right, you deal with it, and just marched out like an absolute baby.
To be fair, we have a lovely new shop manager now called Kat, who's amazing, and she's brought in these new systems that Herbie now works to, and Abby still work, and I do still work with the old system. So it's a bit of a
brilliant
a clash.
Brilliant, but that makes a happy weekend.
Herbie still works in the shop, which is great.
So would you say that you look at this world that you're creating? I like to call them sort of good life businesses. That's what it looks like from the outside. Would you have life any other way?
No, I wouldn't have life any other way. I think running any business in these times is very challenging, as you know. The only answer is to keep on going. And if you can have that lifestyle out of it, which is about community, about people, about creativity, about, you know, all the good things in life, then I think you can have this amazing, rich life, basically, through your work, you know, and you can merge the things together. And I think eventually, you know, going back to AI, it is this scary thing, but if we can use it in the right way with creativity, with community, then I think we probably can end up in a good place. But it's hard to see that at the moment, isn't it? Because the world is so...
I think we will go through dystopia before we get to utopia. But it is there, you know, if everyone can have good healthcare throughout the globe, etc., and access to water. These are things that could be worked out with the intelligence of AI, but with the empathy and the humanness of people.
I'm sure you're familiar with Royal Mail postboxes and parcel postboxes. I mean, aren't they a recognisable sight across the country? I know I walk past them multiple times a day. Well, did you know you can use them to post parcels as well as letters? They're another easy and quick way to send your parcels. And you can even pop those small parcels like earrings or small t-shirts into your postbox at the end of your street. And the best part? You can get proof of posting using the Royal Mail app. Why not find out about how to send your parcels at royalmail.com? I was thinking about what you would just say, the riches. It's funny you should say that, because I was really thinking about the riches and sort of, you know, programming myself for the next decade and what we've been brought up on in terms of how we believe. So certainly I've touched on being a woman in business, but just generally in business, what we believe business to be, you know, so grow it, expand it, you know, make a lot of money, sell it and move on, you know, that and shareholder value and all these sorts of things. And whether that we're at a point where, with this rise of AI and rise of technology and rise of the ability to squeeze every margin out of everything, you know, you can do that now because of the way and the world that we live in. But is there now amazing space to do not the opposite from running a fake business? I mean, is there the space now to do the opposite, which is to build businesses like yourselves that can create meaningful, proper movements whilst being profitable, whilst doing all the tick boxing, but actually their riches, it's not just capital, it's not just money. The riches are in the impact. And I'm really doing a lot of thinking about that for myself at the moment.
I think you're totally right. I think that it's all about being holistic and running it in the way that you want to run it. So you have to ask yourself, what are the things that are really important to me? And if it is greed, money, wealth, blah, 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 then great, good luck. But if it is the things that make you tick and fill your heart back up, I mean, for us, it's definitely community. We see it in our shop every day. So it is making a direct impact, you know, and that's really valuable. And I think spreading the word of creativity, those are the things that are really important to us. But you have to define what they are. Where we had an amazing woman called Selena Barker, who helped us get ourselves out of this big knot that we were in about a year ago. We really managed to redefine what it was we wanted. We had to write a letter back from our 80-year-old selves, like, where am I, what am I doing, who am I surrounded with, what are the most cherished bits, a bit like the letter that we'll read to you in a minute. But those things, I mean, for us it isn't about money really anymore, it's about spreading the word about creativity, and it's about seeing our nation become playful and hopeful again. And I think it's time for an art renaissance, and if we lived in a place where there was an art renaissance that came from the young, I think we would all feel much better in our day-to-day business.
Hallelujah. Yes. I'm in. Where do I sign?
Right here, baby.
right here, baby. This is it. We started this podcast when I was offline saying, I think this podcast could be about 2.5 hours long if we allowed ourselves, but we are coming towards the end, and you guys have really, really shared. It feels like so much of the ups and downs of your journey. I do use the analogy that doing this gig is a roller coaster. Rue, what would you say has been one of your biggest lows? I'd like to ask you both, and maybe they're going to be the same, but on this roller coaster where you felt sick in your stomach, can you cite a certain time?
No, I don't know. Like, obviously, we had a low when we had to close our original shop. But I've sort of loved the journey. You know, I love working for myself. I love being creative. And I suppose one of the lows would come, you know, when you get a bit older. Like, I turned 50 2 years ago, and that's quite hard, like, as you're getting older and you're still sort of trudging along, and it's still very hard to make an independent business work. Mm-hmm. So you're not getting any younger, but it's getting harder. So that can be a bit of a low, but I wouldn't do anything else. I remember going for I think I tried one more time to go for an interview for a job, and I was 32, and he just said, "You're too old." And then I just thought, well, bugger that. So I'm all in, and I know I'm never going to retire.
You're proudly unemployable. I call that to myself.
Yeah, I've always been unemployable.
Unemployable.
Always. And I'm fine with that.
You're fine with that. And what about you? What would you say has been a low?
Well, I think when I spoke about that before, about having to liquidate, and also I was married before, and that finished at the same time. So my marriage collapsed, and then I got with Rupert and we had a baby, and the business liquidated, and I literally just felt like I could walk off the edge of the earth. So I think that was probably it. But then you have this amazing child that's there, and, you know, your focus changes and it becomes about something different. So there's, like you say, then the roller coaster goes up again and then it comes back down. But I think for me, having my credibility taken away from me was what really hit me.
Yeah. Oh, I've never heard that one. Credibility taken away from you. And what about when the wind is in your hair? And you're on the most well-designed cart at the top, and everyone's jealous of your cart because it looks very cool. Mm. What would you say has been, Abby, to you, one of your greatest highs?
I think when a project culminates is when I'm very happy. So, you know, these projects can take a long time. Like, we refurbished a whole bakery and split it into various units, and that includes the shop. And that was a really big project. And then when that comes to fruition and you open your shop doors, for instance, all of our shop windows were hoarded up, and it was only the morning that we opened the shop and this light came through, and it was totally biblical. And everyone just ran in, because it was, you know, just after COVID, and just said, "Thank God you're open. This is amazing. This is what we need. We need colour and community and somewhere where we can all talk about art and artists can gather." And I think to bring all of those things in, which are all of our core values and all of, you know, it's everything to us, is all those things that Rue said. I mean, we have exactly the same core values, so that's good.
And conversely, yourself, would that be?
Well, I would say the shop now is one of those highs, because it after 5 years, it's almost 5 years old.
It's working,
and it works.
Oh, I'm so happy.
You know, it works. You know, so it's a success story. You know, which is, you know, we don't know how long it's going to be around for. It might be another 5 years. It might be another 10 years. But it's worked, and that's what we're very proud of it.
Just to add one more thing to the shop is that we have started to turn it into a studio where we're doing the podcasts for the book. So it's, for anyone that's never been, it has like glass on two sides. It's like a classic corner shop, but we have gigs and stuff that we're starting to live stream. And all of this will create content for the book that will go up online, and we'll be interviewing musicians and all sorts of people. But you'll be able to come and watch recordings happen in the shop, like a studio space. And that's really exciting, to be able to put the word out like that and mix, like, in real life things, and also share them as well. So that's, for me, is like the future of the shop, to combine everything again.
Amazing.
And make it a very physical space that people can come and experiment with their work.
Amazing. Gosh, lucky people, lucky people. It's that time. We sort of started, didn't we, right at the beginning, talking about the little ones. I know you've both prepared letters to your younger self. Have you shared them with each other?
We have.
You have?
Yeah. Abby wrote hers yesterday.
Oh.
I wrote mine this morning.
Fantastic. Well, who should we start? Who would like to go first?
I think Abby should go first.
I knew you'd say that. Okay.
Over to you, Abby.
Okay. Dear Abby, you'll be pleased to know that you don't really change that much. At 5 or at 53, you are still the same person. Even your dress sense, embarrassingly, stays consistent. Once a tomboy, always a tomboy. You always felt you were a little bit different, a bit special, and truthfully, you still feel that. A big part of that comes from always being given the freedom to be creative. It was never questioned that you could do exactly what you wanted to do. I remember a friend's mum once saying, Abby will always do what she wants and you will never be able to stop her. And she was right. Even now, when I get an idea, I don't stop to decide whether it's a good or a bad one. I just go for it. And it's only afterwards do I sometimes reflect and think, well, maybe that wasn't the best idea. But the point is, I pursue things wholeheartedly. That encouragement to be authentic, to follow what I love, has carried me through. Of course, there's times when I've drifted or lost my way, but generally I'm still excited by the same things that lit me up when I was younger. I could offer advice to my younger self. It would be to prioritise yourself and your practice more. You've always been an idealist. You're often dreaming on behalf of others, but it's important to champion yourself too. Your highs will come from seeing things through, whether it's a fashion collection, a house renovation, opening a shop, or delivering a project, or writing a book. Your pride will come from your perseverance. Looking back, maybe I tell you to try and understand yourself more quickly. But at the time, there's been such richness in this journey, and you'll be lucky enough to own your own home, to create work you believe in, and to live a full creative life and make a difference. I remember Rupert's dad before he died. He lined up his obituary in the garden, Rupert's dad lined up his obituary in the Guardian about his amazing career. And I thought, yes, I want an obituary in the Guardian showing how I made a difference. And I hope that the work that I'm pursuing in the creative careers will spark an art renaissance and be part of that. But here's what I really want to tell you. You're going to have a lot of fun with a lot of really fun people. And if that ever stops, then you know that you've taken a detour. With love, me.
Love it, Abby. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to hand over to Rupert.
mine's not as long as that. Abby's good with words. Mine says, Dear Rupert, how's it going? Just so you know, you were right. You're much better at being an adult than being a teenager. You're more in control and you give less Fs, because I can't say that word. And you don't care what anyone else thinks, which has been the problem for most of your life, caring what people think. How crazy is that? I know school was hard, as A, you didn't want to be there, and B, all you wanted to do was art. Well, the good news is that's what you have continued to do without hesitation. Even when financially at times it's been impossible, you've kept on going and it's given you the lifestyle that you've always wanted, putting creativity first above anything else. So I would say to the younger me, have the confidence to be yourself and to know that you are as good as all those other students who get straight A's. You're as good as all those people excelling at sport, music, and foreign languages. You will find your people, you will find your family, and you will make a life out of being creative and all that it brings. They don't call you the felt tip wizard for nothing. Love, Rupert.
Beautiful, babe.
Felt tip wizard. You know, when I listen to both of you, I feel so grateful because in one hand, I'm saying, so after 25 years, and then I sit with two people bearing their soul, telling me about the energy that they have to making a real difference, to feeling a bit tired and it's harder than ever. But at the same time, you're going to give this everything. And we're really lucky that you are enthused enough by creativity that we have you championing it for us. What would we do without people like you? You know, and I say that it's hard for you maybe to hear that, but it's the truth, because thank God, Abby, you're and Rupert, you're this passionate that after 25 years of giving, 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 you're going to give some more. Aww. And that you're, it feels like you're just beginning. And that's what I love about this journey. It just takes that mindset, doesn't it? The shift, the slamming of the table on the floor and saying, no, Rishi, this is not going to be happening. And for you to do it, Abby, for you to get that energy. And then we get to watch you and support you. But you had to do the hard work first.
Aww.
And I just wanted to say thank you, because I know that is not easy. Not after 25 years, right? It's just not easy. But, you know, good on you. Good on you for being who you are.
Thank you. It is.
It's important, isn't it? I was suddenly thinking, you know, if we hadn't taken the bold steps to buy this building and create the shop that we've created, a developer would have come in and turned it into soulless flats, and you would have just had people living here. You know, that it takes creative people to do extraordinary things.
Mm-hmm.
And without those people, you would just have plain
robots.
Yeah.
But likewise to you, Holly, it's incredibly inspirational what you do. And I think the way that we all have to support each other and pick each other up and say, you know, it is okay to fold a business. These things are important to be heard and have that support. And you do that so, so well. So massive thank you to you.
Yeah, thank you, Holly.
Thank you. Well, I feel just renewed with energy, and that potentially there's some more things that we can do together from this podcast, and just well done for looking after our children of the future. And actually I go as far as to say well done for creating an avenue where I feel hopeful. I can deal with AI if there's creativity.
100%.
I almost can deal with life, and I can even deal with the shambles that we're living in if there's creativity. I mean, without creativity, there's no hope. And so thank you for doing what you're doing. And I wish you everything.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Holly.
Much appreciated.
Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams to build a life they love.